Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go on any further, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on this land we are broadcasting from. I also would like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders of more recent arrival. And big shout out to everybody taking our program via the National Indigenous Radio Service, beaming us into quite a few communities around this beautiful continent of ours. Big shout out to all our mob. On the program with me today, I have Yolandi Brown, a deadly choreographer, who's a part of Bangara and also a part of the new work that they have. It's going on a national tour. It's Dark Emu. It's Bangara's adaptation of Uncle Bruce Pascoe's deadly and informing book called Dark Emu, Black Seeds, informing its readers about the sustainable agriculture and farming aspects and styles of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people all over this continent. I've read the book. It's actually one of the first books I ever read from front to cover. Me and my partner would read it to each other. It's a really, really deadly book, and there's many videos of Uncle Bruce Pascoe speaking about his book. He recently done a really, really good TEDx talk, I believe, in Sydney, talking about how Aboriginal people were the first bakers and, sustainable farming. But my guest, I have two guests on. A little bit later in the program, we'll give Jasmine Shepherd a call to have a yarn about her part within this deadly plague. But at the moment, I'll bring my guest in that I have live in the studio. Yolandi, how are you going?
Great. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. You're rugged up there, are you?
I know.
Feeling cold?
I'm feeling cold today. I don't know. I think it was a chilly morning.
Yeah, it was. And you're local as well? You grew up in and around Brisbane?
I did. I grew up in Brizzy, went to Western State School here and Brisbane State High and Junction Park and went to QUT. I studied dance there. I did my BA in dance here.
West End might have changed a lot.
It has changed so much.
When you were going to primary school.
I'm a bit sad because every time I come back home, I see all the Queenslanders are slowly disappearing and all the little boxes are replacing them.
Yeah, all large boxes now, all these big high-rises that are going up everywhere.
Yeah.
We used to have a really, really good view around the building up in the upstairs here. Of the city and then towards the mountain, but now all these high rises and massive big units and flats are going up. You can hardly see anything. But before we go any further, please tell us your mob and where you're from.
My mob's Bidjara from central Queensland around Charleville or Gathella. And we had some people from Charleville, some of the mob, come for community night here on Thursday night, which was fantastic. They hopped on a bus and drove for 10 hours to come and watch the show. Some young kids that the company worked with. We have a youth program called Rekindling Program, where three of our former dance artists, Sydney Saltner, Patrick Thiday and Chantelle Kerr, go out to different communities and work with elders and young people and help facilitate the exchange of stories and connection to land. They spend time on country and get inspired.
Up on Bidjara country?
This year they went to Bidjara country, so they connect with different mobs around Australia. And I was really sad because my heart was in two places this year. I was so fortunate to be able to step back into the studio and create Dark Emu, co-create Dark Emu with Stephen and Dan and all the dancers. And while that was at the beginning of that, that's when Chantelle and Patrick and Sydney were heading out to Charleville and were going to Mount Tabor. And I was like, oh, I really would love to go there too, but I can't do everything. It was just so fantastic to step back into the studio and, I stepped away from the studio 3 years ago when I had my baby boy, but I danced with Bangara for about 16 years.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah, and came back as coordinator of Knowledge Ground after I had little Xavier, and which is also going to be really interesting. It's going to be a storyboard digital walkthrough for where you can choose your own adventure and step through the company's last, well, next year it'll be 30 years of Bangara repertoire. So you'll be able to look into costume design or all the different cultural consultants that have worked with us, all the stories we've told and all of that. Definitely. But anyway.
And for our listeners as well, if you like, give our listeners a bit of background on Bangara. Like you said, it's been on for like 30 years almost.
Yeah. So next year is our 30th anniversary. And Stephen Page became our amazing artistic director back in 1991. So he's been, he is just tireless and a constant inspiration to the entire company. So,
And so for our listeners, well, like Bangara is a performing arts.
We're Australia's premier Indigenous contemporary dance company, and we're the only major arts company that is Indigenous. Our primary arts focus is dance, but within our shows, it's like a real alchemy of all different arts. We have the visual arts in there because, like, we've got Jacob Nash doing our set designs on Dark Emu, and they're just beautiful. He's an Indigenous man. We've got the amazing music. We've got the lights. The costumes are beautiful. So it's a real experience watching a Bangara production, because it's the dancers put their heart and soul into telling the story, and then it's supported by all those incredible elements that when you sit and watch a show, it's almost as though it's a form of meditation and you lose yourself. You lose yourself in the production, and 70 minutes later you're like, oh, has it finished?
Yeah. And you've already done shows in Sydney, Canberra, Perth. Now it's Brisbane, and then you're off to Melbourne. How has it been received?
Wonderfully. It's been a really great journey, this one. I mean, every show that we do is different. Last year we did Benelong, which is a narrative, and this work, Dark Emu, is, I guess, because where the dancers are physicalizing ideas such as agriculture and aquaculture and cultural practices. So it's a little more abstract. It's not a narrative. But so every show we do is different, and that's why audiences can come back time and time again. And there are so many incredible stories from our deep history that it's always hard to pick what story we're going to tell the next year.
Definitely. You know. How did this come about of picking this book and then, I guess, putting it into a play?
Well, I'd read Dark Emu. My neighbour lent me the book, and she's like, you've got to read this book. And so I read it, and I just thought, wow, this is fantastic. And why doesn't everybody already know this information? Why hasn't it been put through the education curriculum? It left me feeling a little bit sad. And also it was interesting that to feel like what we know, like you kind of know that the mob has always worked harmoniously with land in a really incredibly intelligent way, refining systems over thousands of generations to enable us to live harmoniously and sustainably and with the surplus to survive in areas without causing salination, without, you know, causing issues with water management, all of those things. So I thought, well, everybody should know about all of these methods because they work. They've been working for 60 to 80,000 years. And anyway, I chatted with Stephen about the book, and he bumped into Uncle Bruce Pascoe at the Writers' Festival in Sydney, and then Uncle Bruce is a great fan of Bangara, and so he'd seen Benelong, and he's like, hey, why don't you make next year's work my book, Dark Emu? And Stephen had a little think about it and thought, you know what? Like, usually our works are planned a couple of years before, but this one just kind of happened. Like, it just all kind of came together like magic. And yeah, so everything, the stars aligned. And yeah, so we only had 7 weeks to create the show.
Yeah.
But Uncle Bruce was great, because with our work, such a huge component of our work is our time we spend with cultural consultants.
Mm.
Because that's like the heart of what we do, you know, making sure that we're following all the protocols that go back to the roots of these stories and connecting to the heart of the stories and what links the people to the stories. And that's what we've tried to do with this show. So it's not just about the water and the plants, but it's about the people's connection to land and spirit and country and practices. And I think that also gives it a really strong emotional journey as an audience member.
And you mentioned before, I guess, the how difficult it sort of is to sort of, I guess, show or sort of describe to the people coming to see the shows how you sort of play. Because I guess like the I guess it's like with the last show you did was Benlong, which was a sold out show. I guess it's sort of easy because that's a person, you know, it's sort of easier to sort of, I guess, model something off of. But then when you're doing a book and you're talking about country and you're talking about different sort of forms of, how do you do that?
It's interesting because, I mean, we always speak physically from the black perspective. And so with Benlong, a lot of people know who Benlong was, and you look at like where the Opera House sits, that's on Benlong Point. But it's looking deeper into that and finding out, like telling the black perspective of this man's life. And with this story, Dark Emu, it's quite abstract and the book is broken down into different chapters. But we wanted to also give it a really strong emotional trajectory. And we worked, again, we've worked with her a few times before, amazing dramaturg Alana Valentine. So she came in for the project and she helped us identify the key aspects of the book that that would really lend themselves beautifully to presentation on stage and movement. And then she also helped us generate create these sparks of tension that would fire out at different points within the work, which sort of shoots the audience into a different state of what's happening here on country and the ignorance and, it adds pertinent contrast to
and what parts I guess from the book have you put into the play is the whole like
obviously we can't do the whole book in 70 minutes as much as we and because there is just like so many mobs that are mentioned in the book if you read it really crosses so much of Australia all so many different communities. And I take my hat off to Uncle Bruce Pascoe, who would have had conversations with so many elders across Australia to pull all of this research together and reading all of the first explorers' journals and stepping into their mindset to see what it was, unraveling what it was that they saw as they first walked across the country. And it's amazing, like reading their accounts through Uncle Bruce's book and knowing that there were fields of flowers that had been cultivated, had been, you know, yam daisies growing. And
as far as the horizon can see.
Yeah, fields of grass that had been pulled out and were drying and ready to be, you know, the ovens that were there to make the breads and the fermented foods and the fish traps that are thousands of years old.
I guess like the different terrains, like the yams could grow in as well, whether it's out in the desert, you know, in cool, really cool, cold climates as well.
Yeah. And the practice of in the desert, for example, of collecting the seeds and burying them in the in the old dried out stumps along the rivers so that if there's really bad drought, there's a stash of seeds saved for future generations. So when the rains do come, they can be replanted and species don't go extinct because you've got your totems and you're looking after those plants and then the plants are feeding the emus and the emus feed you and the plants feed you and you're all looking after each other really, you know. So that practice has always been such a strong part of Indigenous life. And then, just walking through the book and seeing all of the beautiful images that unfold through Uncle Bruce's curation of that knowledge, and then being inspired to turn that into a dance work.
Yeah.
It's been a fantastic process.
And off air, you were talking in the play, you put the fish traps in. And how did that work?
So Daniel Riley created a section which we've called Rocks of Knowledge, and that was inspired by the Brewarrina fish traps, which have been there. And your mobs,
my mum was born there. Yeah. And they're all right out there. Yeah.
Have you been?
Yeah, we've been to Bree. Yeah. I've been for. I think I was there early last year for some sorry business and that. But yeah, try and go every year, every few years, but it's just too much to get out there from Brisbane. I think it's like 12, 14 hours. No, longer.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, very beautiful place, especially those fish traps.
Yeah. And so Dan was inspired by a lot of different aspects of that. So looking at the natural elements of the
fish. Did you have to visit these sites as well, or...?
Well, we only had 7 weeks to create the work. So the company was really fortunate to be able to go. One of our cultural consultants was Lynette Thomas, and she invited the company, the dancers, to her country, and which is not too far from Canberra. So the dancers were lucky to be able to go there, and she walked them through country and took the women up to a women's side up the mountain and explained stories and the dancers found that incredibly enriching personally. And that's what's so beautiful about what we do with Bangara is every show that we create, we always make the effort to try to take it back to country. So I'm not sure where this work will go because so many mobs are in the book, but we've focused mainly on the Yuin people with this book, with our production.
Which part in the book where you're focusing on the Yuin mob?
Oh, well, there's a story of the whales.
That's
an amazing story with the, we've called the section Whales of Fortune, where the mob would work with the humpbacks. Yeah. And so, like, there's a story about this old man who'd dance and pretend to be lame, and he'd do some dancing in between two fires that he'd set up on the beach, and the killer whales would be out in the deep, and they'd notice the fire, and they'd see the old man dancing between the two fires and would start feeling sorry for him. And they'd know when it was humpback season, and the killer whales would feast off the humpbacks, and they'd be fatiguing the humpbacks and attacking them and making them exhausted, and then they'd drive them into Twofold Bay. And, they'd share their kill with the people there.
Yeah.
And the killer whales would eat the tongue of the humpback, and then the people would share in the rest of the humpback. And there's big connections between that practice and also the Bogong moth harvest up in the mountains where the people would harvest.
Around in Canberra.
Up in the snowy mountains and around the mountains around there. And there'd be so many Bogong moths that if they were disrupted, they'd fly up into the air like massive black clouds that could then be netted, and they had to be treated really specific, like they had to be burnt really carefully, cooked really carefully so their wings didn't singe, otherwise a big storm would blow in and blow the moths out to sea. So all of these stories, they've got so many beautiful images, and they're very inspirational for choreographers and storytellers.
Definitely are. If you're just tuning in to Let's Talk, my guest on the program this morning is Yolandi Brown, the co-choreographer of Dark Emu, which is a really, really deadly production that is still here in Brisbane and finishes
Saturday night
on the 1st. So if you're in Brisbane, get down. You did mention the community night earlier. You said some mob
that was Thursday.
Thursday that came down for it. How was it received?
Oh, it was fantastic. So we're sponsored by the Belknaves Foundation, which support us in providing a few community nights within our season. So this year we had community night in Sydney. Brisbane was our second one, and Melbourne will be our third community night. And it's a way of making our show more accessible to the mob. And It acts as a preview for us as well, and the dancers just feel so comfortable to give their first performance on the stage, knowing that the audience has got their backs, you know, and they give such a deadly performance for that community night because it's family out there. So,
And I guess how has it been received just in general from general public as well?
It's been really great, and I mean, we were sold out in Perth before the company even arrived, but we only did 5 shows there. It's such a long way to go just for a handful of shows. Yeah. But, it's been incredible. And I think it's really wonderful because it's not only great for Bangarra, but it's great that our deep history is being shared and the level of interest and people wanting to learn more. Mm. And, Uncle Bruce Pascoe's book is one that I think every Australian should read.
Yes.
And you know what? If you're not a reader, then Bangarra's work is a great way to open your eyes to this stuff because, not everybody wants – there's also – I think he's also done a disc recording, an audio book. But, not everybody is a reader.
No, definitely not. Because, the book is very, very thought-provoking and very challenging. I remember watching some of Uncle Bruce's talks and he was saying, you know, in the lead-up to this book, you know, he'd argue with historians about the role that our mob played before colonialism. And then now after sort of the shift around this conversation has changed. And obviously, you know, the play, you know, does that as well. It's very, very thought-provoking in how our mob have seen as, you know, I guess pre, you know, colonial times.
Yeah. Well, I guess a lot of the first explorers were contracted to be doing their work as well. And so I guess, you know, they were here with an intention and a purpose, and ultimately they had to support the claim of Terra Nullius.
Definitely. So. And like you can read it in within Uncle Bruce's book where he's grabbing excerpts from these explorers' books and how racist they was in viewing our mob, but still saying how fascinated they was by seeing, you know, yams, you know, as far as the eye can see, or you know, the land, you know, being you know, farmed and how soft it is, you know, and
the soils were so soft and spongy. They weren't hardened by hooves or
And then I guess in the book as well, he mentions how a farmer realized like a year or two or three later how his cattle actually destroyed the land. It's a magnificent book. We're going to head to a quick song break. You are listening to Let's Talk. My guest is Yolandi Brown from Bangarra, and we've been yarning about the new production Dark Emu, which is in Brizzy till Saturday the 1st, so please get down and check it out. We're going to head to a quick song, and we'll be back after the break. You're listening to 98.9 FM, and this is Anthem by Titters.
Don't sing me an anthem, because you don't know the words. Words are hard to remember when they mean nothing at all to the heart who's still waiting for their voice to be heard. Don't sing me your anthem when your anthem's absurd. Sing me your anthem till we've learned how to share.
This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
And you're back on Let's Talk. I'm your host, Bo Spearham, and my guest is Yolandi Brown, proud Bidjara woman and also a proud performer with Bangarra, choreographer, and also a part of the new production, Dark Emu. We've been yarning about her involvement in Dark Emu. She came back after maternity leave, having her young one, and came on as choreographer. But also in a lot of Bangarra's performances, you do other work within it as well. Was it yarning off air?
Oh, yeah. I was just chatting about how I've contributed to a lot of the music within the company, which has been great because I grew up in a family of musicians and I studied piano for many years and Goodly. I've always sung at home and also professionally as well when I've had time. I mean, I've mm-hmm. been so busy telling our stories with Bangarra that I haven't had a lot of time to do other stuff really. Mm. But, yeah, contributing vocals to and sometimes keys to our soundtracks has been really beautiful, and it's been great to have done a lot of work with the late David Page, who really helped create the genre of our music. Yeah, back when he first created the very early productions like Ninny and Pray Mantis Dreaming in the early 90s, he was really experimenting with of how you can mix traditional music and traditional sounds with contemporary music. Mm. And he's just found such an amazing way to do that. And I love how he always strived to mess it up and be inspired with new ways of doing it, new beats and new ways of creating sounds, generating sounds and mixing the traditional sound styles in with that to create something that just has it. It's a world unto itself, our audioscape within the show. And we're so lucky. And this year, Steve Francis, who's worked with the company on and off since 1996 as well. So he created the music for this show. And we always want to reawaken some of the stories David has told musically. And in this work, we reawoke one of the songs that he wrote for our show back in 2000, which was called Skin, and it was a women's section called Nesting, which was about having like looking after families and birthing and dealing with problems and issues. And we reawoke one of the songs that Elaine Crombie sang, and I sang at this time for a section called Bowls of Mourning, which is a women's section which I choreographed. And it's really beautiful to be able to always have a signature piece of David's within our within our works.
Definitely, of course, totally. Big part of the history of Bangarra, but then also contemporary Aboriginal music, performance art, I should say.
That's right.
Mm. And what other stuff, like also we yarned off air as well, that you do some singing with some artists as well?
Yeah, I worked with Wesley Enoch back in 2012 on a project called I'm Eora, and I associate directed and choreographed that with Wesley, and that was such a fantastic experience. We worked with, I had a huge cast. There were like 50 people in the production, and we only had about 3 weeks to pull it all together. It was amazing. And that's where I met David Lahar, who is Radical Son, and he's such an inspiring artist, and he does a lot of work with communities, and his voice is just so powerful. He invited me to do backup vocals with him. So for the last couple of years, I've been when the full band is on tour, I've been a part of that, which is just so much fun. We did Garma last year. Mm. And Bangarra spends a lot of time on country in northeast Arnhem Land. We've had such a strong relationship with Jakapura Manyaran and Anikathi Marika, and so the company's going out there soon in about 3 or 4 weeks' time to take our work Nyapa Nyapa back to country, and so I always feel it's just such a great experience being able to get out to northeast Arnhem Land, and it was great to be able to do that with Radical Sun last year for Gama.
And how important is it to sort of, I guess, have these, I guess, pillars of people who have, you know, such great cultural knowledge to sort of fall back on when you do, you know, such productions as Dark Emu or, you know, other ones from Arnhem Land as well?
I mean, all our elders, I just always encourage everybody to spend time with your elders and learn stories. It's, you know, you want to be able to pass these stories on to the next generation. So we're also busy in this day and age. You know, we've got these jobs that have got us tied into this like constant Western sense of time, which has you feeling so frenetic that it just seems like we don't have time to sit down and yarn with our elders. But, you know, the reality of that is that unless you do that, you're not going to be able to pass any of these stories on to the next generation. And there are so many incredible stories there. And I often say to young people when I'm working with them, you know, one of the things that I wish I'd done is I wish I'd been able to sit with my grandma and learn more about her time when she was living on country as a young person. And I know a few stories, and I've named my son's middle name is Warrego, which is after the Warrego River, because Granny used to go have to cross the Warrego River every day to get to school. She'd ride on horseback, and she'd hop off a horse at the Warrego River, and she'd hold onto her horse's tail, and they both swim across the river.
Oh, deadly.
So she could get to school. And you know, I wish I had a whole heap of these stories, and that's one of the things we encourage our young people to do when we do workshops and do our rekindling program, and when we're on country and the young people see how we value these stories, and then they get to see their, when we do our return to country, they get to see their stories on the stage, and they get inspired by it as well. And you know, it's that's where so much of the knowledge is. It's shared amongst the elders. That's what we've done traditionally for thousands of years, is that, you know, knowledge hasn't sat on the shoulders of one person. It's been shared collectively amongst the elders, and it's been passed down through song and dance and stories. And let's all face it, like, everybody remembers a great story, you know, and that's why I always say that a lot of our stories may sound like they're fictional or mythology, but there's deeper truths within those stories, and they sound like they're fiction because that's how you remember the deeper truths. And because you know, if there's the excitement of bigger than larger than life scenarios, then you remember the important knowledge that's being passed on.
Definitely. And then that, you know, the empowerment that they can have, you know, on the next generation, you know, to continue you know, preserving, you know, cultures such as ours, such as ancient as ours as well, you know, and then also, you know, realizing, you know, how powerful this book is as well, you know, and when you're reading the accounts of these early explorers and how we, you know, how that knowledge was passed on, you know, to keep that country, you know, in a way that it wouldn't, you know, harm the land and stuff, you know, like, and then to think, you know,
that knowledge that we are land, we are inextricably linked to the earth. The earth sustains us. We're not a separate entity. And if you are a separate entity to that, then you're really a parasite. Let's face it. But I mean, you know, that's how, if you're living respectfully and the land will support you if you sort of, and it takes many years to develop that insight and that to listen over generations to the earth and to the seasons, you know, knowing that wet season is there for a reason and giving the environment the time to go through that season. And like they do up in northeast Arnhem Land, you know, they collect their cycad nuts and they've got a surplus of food to get them through the wet season.
I guess what was, I guess, your interpret or, you know, your understanding before reading this book or even getting involved in this play of, how we maintain country? Because I guess mine's was pretty I wouldn't say ignorant, but, you know, I always never thought that we were just hunter and gatherers, or, you know, just aimlessly wandering, as sort of, you know, the notion has sort of been perceived of our people, you know. And then, like, you read this book and your mind explodes, and like, whoa, like, you know, I always knew that, you know, like, we just weren't what they always said we were, you know. Then you find out in this book.
I know, it's kind of ironic that you need a book to to know what you've always kind of known.
That's the
difference between a, you know, non-literal society and one that requires the written encyclopedia as opposed to the physical encyclopedia. But, yeah, what's amazing about the book is that it does go through the myriad of different cultures and nations within our country, and the fact that Australia was highly populated from desert areas through to forest areas through to river areas. And people,
cold climates as well.
Yep, cold climates up in the snowy mountains. And people had protocols set in place where they had borders without fences. Like they knew knew they could sing country, and they knew where their country and their maintenance for country ended and merged into the next area. And you would sing and ask permission to go onto somebody else's land. That's always been in place for thousands of years, because people have maintained their country and have had exchange between neighbouring countries. You know, Australia wasn't broken down into however many states and territories we have,
or even how many other tribes we had. Like you were saying, you know, like there was that, you know, understanding of how, you know, that land, that supposed border, you know, was protected, or even if you use that word. But even in the book as well, you know, like Uncle Bruce talks about how when they would hunt, I think it's kangaroos, and, you know, they'd hunt large amounts of kangaroos and, you know, only grab certain ones if it's a male, if it's a certain age, and, you know, if it's the right time of the year, or, you know, and
that practice, that understanding, and knowing what the consequences are if you don't follow that reasoning.
If you're just tuning in to Let's Talk, having a great yarn with Yolandi Brown, co-choreographer of the new production Dark Emu, which tells the story of Uncle Bruce Pascoe's book, Dark Emu, Black Seeds. We're just going to head to a quick song break, just so, and then when we come back, we're going to have Jasmine on the phone with us, one of the senior dancers, and then I believe you'll be leaving soon.
Yeah,
shortly. Sadly, yes. But we'll be back in a second after the song. We're going to head to Roslyn by Dan Sultan, and we'll be back. You are listening to 98.9 FM, and this is Let's Talk.
Roslyn, angel child, I said, Roslyn. I said, Roslyn, it's not right. You're my angel child. Well, they took you from my arms. Yeah, they took. If only they knew what they'd done. When they took you from my arms. Now they said that I didn't love you, and they said that I didn't care. Said that I didn't care. They told my babies I was dead.
said, Rosalind, angel child. I said, Rosalind, angel child.
This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
And you're back on Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM. I'm your host, Bo Spearham, and that was Rosalind by Dan Sultan. That's a really, really good song. I like that. I think it's about his grandmother, his great grandmother. The story of how she was taken away down there. All relocated, like maybe to Melbourne, where they're based now. He's got a really, really good way of making his music sound like really, really well and deadly. One of my other favorite songs of his as well. It's not his song, but it's from the Brand New Day when he does the reversion of Cuckold's Black Woman. It is a really, really deadly song. But that's enough about me blabbing on. In the studio with me, still, we have Yolandi Brown, co-choreographer of Dark Emu, the new play that Bangarra is doing, and one of the senior dancers on the phone with me is Jasmine Shepherd. How are you going, Jasmine?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, sis. Thanks for joining us. Just before we start, could I get you to tell us your name, your mob, and where you're from?
Sure. So my name's Jasmine Shepherd, and I was born in Brisbane and raised in Melbourne. And my mob's the Tagalog and Kutcha people from northwest Queensland, near Normanton and Croydon.
Whereabouts in Brizzy did you grow up in Brizzy, or did you move, relocate?
Spent the first 3 years of my life in Browns Plains.
Browns Plains, yeah, on the south side.
Yeah. Excuse me. And I was born at the Marta Mothers.
Marta, yep. Oh, deadly, yeah. I live on the south side. My sister lives out near Browns Plains now, my younger sister.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, like we, you know, we've been yelling with Yolandi Ormond on the program about the play and her role creating such a an amazing play. I haven't gone and seen it. Spewing, I haven't. But you know, like her role in this sort of leads to, you know, you and I guess, you know, you being a senior dancer with Bangarra as well. Could you tell us a bit about your role within the play Dark Emu?
Sure. So I'm one of the senior dancers for the company, and this show, unlike other shows, I don't think there's any one particular feature dancer. I feel like we all kind of are sharing the load on stage, and but a couple of the pieces that I'm in is Kangaroo Grass, which is obviously talking about our native gluten-free flour, really, which is something that us black fellas should get onto, patenting that. But
make
yeah,
a market so and sell it all these hipsters?
Exactly.
In West End and Newtown? Nah.
That's it. Yeah,
in Fitzroy? Nah. Like killing.
Yeah. Nah. Copyright, fellas.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's one piece that I'm in. It's just exploring the way the grass moves, its nature, and how it spreads its roots through the ground. It's kind of the middle of a bit of a triptych about the kangaroo grass coming from the seed to the actual grass, and then to the pollination of the seeds and the grain dust. That was a really important part of the book, and I still think it's really important. Apparently, there were kilometres and kilometres and kilometres that stretched as far as the eye could see of these grains lined up in piles when the settlers went travelling throughout Australia. So that's just one tiny portion of evidence of how sophisticated and thoughtful our farming practices were. Another section that I'm in is another women's piece called Bowls of Mourning, which is commenting on the beautiful practice of the mourning rituals that the women would do, creating these gypsum caps from the clay in the earth and moulding them onto the heads of the women. They would shave their heads down first or cut their hair short, then mould the caps around the head. It's kind of like a symbolic or an actual physicalization of the weight of grief, I think. And the women who were closest to the person who has passed would have the largest caps. And basically the women would just wait for their hair to grow out and push the caps off. So a long process, a lengthy process. And something that I had no idea that existed in this country. So it was quite special for me to discover that too.
Definitely. And like one thing I want to ask the both of you as well, is at the moment, you know, there's a lot of talk and a lot of grief with farmers out in, you know, up in Queensland especially, that are experiencing worstest sort of years of drought in their history. And then like you mob are, you know, putting this play together that speaks of how, you know, rich the land was to a point where, you know, like mob never really experienced these things, but then also in the harshest conditions of this continent, you know, food was flourishing. You just want to speak on, you know, like what's going on now?
Well, I just feel like you just have to be very careful with the consequences of your actions. I think that we're very chainsaw happy, like trigger happy, and I think the mob knew that, well, forests generate their own climates and they generate their own rainfall, and rain can only travel in clouds for around 300 kilometres. So the more forests we lose, the less far these clouds are going to be travelling. And so rain is not going to be able to reach these centres, and they're going to dry out, because coastal forests generate rain for our inland areas. And once again, it's that respect of country and knowing that country has its own, it's like its own body. It's like the forests are its kidneys, or it's, you know, they're there for a reason, to support the whole continent. And altering what's there will have repercussions. And I think, you know, I think we have to look at how, I mean, I think a lot of scientists are discovering the truths behind a lot of Indigenous practices, and hopefully governments might actually pay attention to what is really important to sustain us into the next. This country's only been Australia for the last 230 years. Hopefully we won't be going down the way that's, you know, South Africa's going with droughts, because we've got to listen to what environment needs and put in practice ways to sustain us into the next 230 years. And I think that might also take some, you know, we might have to listen to the mob to gain some deeper experience with some of that, and to the scientists working together collaboratively to create plans for the future to prevent greater, bigger droughts.
Definitely. Jasmine?
Yeah, totally. Hit the nail right on the head. I definitely think there's a reason why our people managed to work with the land and survive for as long as we did, and keep the balance of the ecosystem intact. And so one thing supporting another thing, and nothing ever gets to the point where it's in drought or on the brink of extinction or resources totally used up. So I think, it's maybe going back to what were those practices. I do think that the Australian government has to have a look at our history and have a look at, well, the fact that this country is different from Europe. You can't just come with the same crops, animals, and expect it to work in the exact same way over hundreds and hundreds of years. There's got to be a limitation to that, and I feel like we're seeing that now. So, yeah, maybe it's about looking back and seeing what the practices were in the past and how we can restore our old farming methods, our old ways of caring for country, to bring it back to life.
Definitely. And I just want to say a big thank you for the both of us for joining us on the program this morning. Sorry, Jazz, this feels like you just got on and we're, you know, I'm going
to stop the show. No, that's fine. It's lovely talking to you.
And if any of you mob at Bangarra as well are free over the next few days, we'd love for you just to come down and we'll give you a tour of the radio station as well. Nice. We've got really good facility here as well. I was yarning to Yolandi about, you know, some studios, some film studios as well. We've got a, you know, we've got a good here. But big thank yous for you coming on. And the production finishes on Saturday the 1st. So any listeners out there, please get down there and see the show. But, yeah, big thanks for the both of you for coming on.
No worries.
Thanks for having us.
That's all good. You've been listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM. If you've enjoyed the program, you can tune in at 7 PM tonight to catch the repeat, or go onto our website at 98.9fm.com.au. Follow the links to the podcast, the Play It, and listen to it back whenever you feel like, and then you'll also see previous shows. You're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM.
In the river land, born of her mother, into her mother's hands. She was free as the river was wild. She was so innocent, such a beautiful child. Institutions. What could they do with this child? Where was the neat solution? There was nothing they could do, so they gave her to the